Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
Christian Fowler, senior writer and content creator over at Bluff City Media on XC Fowler BCM. And make sure you check out our podcast. It's the On the Bluff podcast, releases every single Tuesday at noon. Christian, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. Gabe, how you doing?
I'm doing really well. If for no other reason, we just got into July today. I know it's the first, and it's 30 days until this happens. But NFL football is played this month. We have the Chargers and the Lions and the Hall of Fame game on the 31st of July.
Yeah, that's the best news I could possibly hear. I can't remember a Hall of Fame game being at the end of July. I think it's usually like early August. Yeah, but I'm glad to hear it. Also, I think we're probably both in a good mood. It's 4th of July week, and we'll both be out of town this weekend, both you and I.
Yeah, so you're going to be in Florida, and I'm going to be in California, in San Diego.
Yeah.
Yeah. That should be fun.
So we got things to look forward to. The week's always better when it's like the lights at the end of the tunnel and it's brighter than normal.
Yeah, and I tried to bring up this debate, although you've never been to California, but the California beach versus Florida beach conversation, who does better? I likened it to on the show. It's like, do I want to eat a cheeseburger or a hot dog? It's different moods.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, there's only so much opinion I can have
because
I've never
been
to California. But you made the point to me of, like, California beaches, from what you've seen, are more, you know, water sports activities, surfing and stuff like that. There's more swell, colder water.
Way colder.
And see, I don't think I'd be a very big fan of freezing cold water. I mean, like, the water's cool enough in Florida, and that's perfect because it's 100 degrees outside, you can get in the water and you can cool off, but you're not freezing. California beaches, I don't know.
Yeah,
San Diego's
kind of like 75 with wind all year round. Now, the sun beats down really hard, but like you're still, I wouldn't say you're like super hot on the beach, as opposed to Florida where you can get like sitting under an umbrella, whatever you're doing on the beach, you can get really hot out there, start sweating. I feel like, on beaches in California, not quite that.
I think I'm going to go ahead and stamp it then. Florida beaches are over California beaches. I'd be cold. I just know I'd be cold. I get cold very easily. If it's 75 and windy, I'm not going to be hot enough to get in any water. Like, I'm going to be pretty cold.
All right. We need to get you out to a California beach so you can experience, though, before we really, like, stamp that.
Yeah, I'm going to stamp it. I'm going to stamp it with no basis. How about that? Like
okay.
The most unofficial stamp of all time. It basically, like we're forging a stamp right now.
Okay,
that's
fine.
Pretty much what's happening.
That's fine. But NFL football coming up at the end of the month. But we had a big trade in the NFL yesterday. Steelers and Dolphins were doing some maneuvering. Steelers brought in Jalen Ramsey, who the Dolphins have been trying to trade this entire offseason. Pro Bowl and All-Pro cornerback. They bring in tight end Jonnu Smith, who reunites with Arthur Smith after his days with the Titans. But last year, sneaky good year. 88 catches for 884 yards, 8 touchdowns. He was really, really good, and the Steelers bring him in to sort of add to that tight end room with Darnell Washington and Pat Freiermuth. And then the picks, well, we won't even get into that. In return, the Dolphins got Minka Fitzpatrick, who's an All-Pro safety. What's your immediate reaction to this move? Like, what are the first thoughts that come to your head when it comes to what the Steelers did, what the Dolphins did?
I really think it was a lot of lateral movement. And like, to me, okay, I saw this trade. I initially saw the Steelers guy, Jalen Ramsey, and then I'm thinking, wow, Jalen Ramsey, Minkah Fitzpatrick in the same secondary with T.J. Watt rushing the passer. And I'm like, this is scary. Like a Steelers defense that historically been pretty good over the last 5 or 6 years. If they add someone like Jalen Ramsey, they can lock up on the outside. They've got Darius Slay and Joey Porter, Minkah, T.J. Watt, like previously mentioned. Like this defense could be top two or three in the league. And then I see that they're trading Minkah, which is, you know, odd in and of itself. And I start looking deeper into the trade. I see Blockbuster, and I know I didn't really get the Blockbuster feel from this trade necessarily. I know it's two Pro Bowl level players, but I don't feel like either team got substantially better in this trade. So it's hard for me to be like, wow, Blockbuster, massive, like earth-shattering deal. Because to me, when I look at Pittsburgh, okay, they clearly got better at corner. They add Jalen Ramsey to a room that has Joey Porter Jr., who I feel like can develop into a really good corner, and Darius Slay, who is, you know, consistently been one of the better corners in the league. Is he probably on the back end of his career? Yes, but I think he still can be solid and be meaningful to a team. So you go, really good. Corner room is really good. But the safety room, you have Juan Thornhill, who they signed from the Chiefs in free agency. You have Deshaun Elliott, who's coming off a solid season last year. And I go, did their secondary get better overall? And honestly, I think it's pretty much the same. I think you're worse at safety and better at corner when in the other situation you were worse at corner and better at safety. Like, you didn't markedly improve your secondary, in my opinion. And with the tight end, with Jonnu Smith coming in, you have Pat Freiermuth, who has shown that he's a very capable pass catcher and has had his moments, but has really just played in an offense that has been anything but high-flying throughout his career. And you have Darnell Washington behind him, who is just an anchor. He is a sixth offensive lineman, offers pretty much no pass-catching ability, but a great, great blocker. And so I didn't look at their tight end room as an area of weakness, and I didn't look at their corner room as necessarily an area of weakness. Was it one of the best in the league? No. But it was around middle of the pack where you go, it's okay. You can live with this. And tight end room, same thing. So I just don't know how to feel about it because I don't think they needed a tight end. I don't think they necessarily needed a corner. And so it's a weird move for Pittsburgh. And then for Miami, they were already weak at cornerback outside of Jalen Ramsey. They did not have much to offer there. So I think they kind of are in the same boat. Like, their corners got worse, but their safety got better. They lost Javon Holland in free agency to the Giants. They bring Minkah back, who they drafted, I believe, in 2018 and was there for a year and a couple of weeks before he was traded to Pittsburgh and really broke out. So it's one of those trades I look at and go, did either team get better? And to me, marginal at best. Like, there's a marginal difference for both teams, honestly. I know a good corner helps a good defensive end. I know Jalen Ramsey will help T.J. Watt.
If they get a deal done, by the way. They have to get a deal done with T.J. Watt.
Right. They have to figure something out and not trade him, which would make this move look even more weird. But just overall, I look at it and I go, did either team get better? Maybe slightly. Maybe Pittsburgh got slightly better and Miami got slightly. I don't know. It just felt like an unnecessary trade for me, especially for Pittsburgh. If they're trying to, you know, go all out and
put all
their eggs into the one basket of the 1 year of Aaron Rodgers and say we're trying to give him everything to win a Super Bowl, I don't know if losing Minkah Fitzpatrick and adding Jalen Ramsey and Jonnu Smith get this team any closer to a Super Bowl or to being a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah, okay. So breaking down the Steelers side, because the Dolphins side to me just, whatever. They wanted to get off the Jalen Ramsey contract. They find a cheaper, good player at safety. It is what it is. They had their hands on him at one point, though, which just kind of, like, they tried to move, Brian Flores tried to move Minkah Fitzpatrick to nickel or to corner. Yeah. And, of course, they trade him to the Steelers. He's a all-pro multiple-time free safety. But that's beyond the point. To me, it makes some theoretical sense for the Steelers. But, like, it's theoretical, not reality. Jalen Ramsey is an all-pro level corner at his peak. But, you know, he's 30 years old. He's lost a couple of steps. Jonnu Smith was the NFL's leader in yards after catch among tight ends last year, and he was very good, and he got to a Pro Bowl. It was his only Pro Bowl. But is he going to be able to recreate that at what is now a 29? He's 29 years of age. So, like, that's something.
With a quarterback who historically doesn't throw the ball to tight end.
Correct. And he's, to me, like, how does he fit alongside Pat Freiermuth? I think he's a scheme fit with Arthur Smith in his offense. He runs a lot of 12 personnel, so one running back and two tight ends. And maybe the Darnell Washington thing was annoying Arthur Smith because you can't really use him in route combinations, and Jonnu Smith and Pat Freiermuth are going to be a little more dynamic there. But to your point, Aaron Rodgers is not a historical tight thrower of the football to tight ends, so that's kind of bizarre. Also, if you go a little deeper, the age thing, if this was 2021, I may be bullish on them being a Super Bowl contender. Right?
Oh, yeah.
But it's 2025. Like, Aaron Rodgers, 41. Darius Slay, 34. Robert Woods is 33. Cam Hayward's 36. Jalen Ramsey's 30. And Jonnu Smith's 29. And then here's the other thing that really gives me the most pause. Because if the Steelers, with this roster that they've put together, this makeshift 2025-26 go-for-it roster, if they were to be a playoff success story, it would be an unprecedented success story. Because you look at last year, they lost their leading passer, leading receiver, leading rusher. So they lost Russell Wilson, George Pickens, Najee Harris. Now, have they replaced those guys? Sure. But that's an obvious lack of continuity. And I would venture to say, in the history of the NFL, I think it's pretty rare for a team to be a Super Bowl contender or to win playoff games or to have playoff success when they have that much turnover from one year to another. So this... if this works, it would be an unprecedented situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And just saying the things about this team and the holes that you can see in this roster and saying, like, we're doing the Rams thing, the Les Snead thing. We're trying to go all in and put together this team around Aaron Rodgers that can make a Super Bowl run. I just think that there were other areas that they could have added to make them a much better team than this move did. Like, for example, if they could have found a trade partner to get a solid wide receiver two and an offensive lineman, I think that's a lot more necessary than a corner and a tight end. Because you look at this offensive line, it hasn't been great over the last couple of years. You look at their wide receiver core, I mean, they got DK Metcalf in the offseason, but they're looking at behind him like Robert Woods and Roman Wilson, who was
don't forget Calvin Austin the third. Come on now,
and
Memphis
Love. Calvin Austin also, but I mean we know Calvin Austin is kind of a one trick pony, and what he's going to do in that offense is run straight down the field. But having a true number two, like possession type receiver, whatever the case may be, Robert Woods isn't that guy anymore. Roman Wilson is a huge question mark. Yes, he was a second round pick last year, but I think he was out during training camp with injury, missed a lot of the season, just never was really able to do much. So, like I said, big question mark there. So, weaponry for Aaron Rodgers. And this is – we talked about this, I think, last week, a couple weeks ago. Aaron Rodgers looked really good towards the end of last season, but he also had Garrett Wilson and Devontae Adams. Like, that is a huge deal. And he doesn't have a player like that on this roster. I know people love DK Metcalf. But he's not nearly the route runner those guys are. Like, he's not someone who is beating a corner one-on-one with his route running ability. He might beat them with his size and his speed and his athleticism. But, like, we've seen throughout his career, he can't necessarily be relied on as a true number one wide receiver. Like, he's always had a Robin to his Batman or, you know, some kind of sidekick with having Tyler Lockett early in his career, with having JSN the last couple of years and having the season he did last year. I just don't know if I trust this team at all. Like, I don't look at them and they don't inspire any confidence in me. Now, do they have pieces? Absolutely. I mean, they have one of the best coaches in the league in Mike Tomlin. We'll see what Aaron Rodgers can do as far as turning the clock back. But I understand you know he's there for 1 year. And you want to go for it. But I just feel like there are better moves to make. And this one just really fell flat to me. I don't feel like they got closer to being a contender with this. And I think at this point, that's what you're trying to do. Like, obviously, they're getting older. They're getting a lot of older players. So the only logical assumption is going for Super Bowl, but I just don't look at a roster and go, yeah, they're competing. Like they're putting teams in the AFC on notice. I don't see that at all.
The O-line thing is the thing that scares me the most with Aaron Rodgers at 41. The escapability we saw last year after the Achilles injury, just not the same. And I seriously have this worry. Is this offensive line for the Steelers worse than what he had last year with all those old guys? Right? You had Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses and all those guys on a one-year deal with the Jets. They weren't very good. But, like, you look at the Steelers offensive line, and, yeah, they have a couple of good pieces. They got Zach Frazier in the draft last year, and he had a good rookie year. But it's just like, is this better? It doesn't necessarily seem that way. Now they're going to run the ball a little bit more. They're going to play in a more big system, more tight ends. They're going to try to do that. There's going to be more play action, so maybe the escapability isn't that much of a worry as compared to last year in the system he was playing in with more dropbacks. But it's going to be a wait and see thing. Now, to replace Jonnu Smith, did you see what the Dolphins are doing, by the way?
I did see this.
The Dolphins are trading a 2026 sixth-round pick to the Giants for a 2027 seventh-round pick and a guy that retired by the name of Darren Waller after his trade to the Giants and then bad season, couldn't stay healthy. But Waller's coming out of retirement for the Dolphins for a one-year deal worth up to, so incentive-laden, $5 million. Okay, that's one way to go replace the guy, but the guy has been away from football for 2 years, better part of 2 years now.
Yeah, it just makes the move even more head-scratching for Miami. It's like, okay, you traded a tight end, now you realize you had a hole there, and you filled it with a guy who hasn't played football at all over the last 2 years. And, right. I mean, Darren Waller, he had his moments. He had productive seasons with the Raiders. I think it was few and far between with the Giants. I know he was injured a lot. Maybe he had a couple games here and there where he was productive. But he's very injury prone, first off the rip, and he hasn't played in 2 years. So I'd imagine that's not very good. He's not used to getting hit anymore. He very much relied on his athleticism, route running ability. He's 2 years older. He hasn't played, so you'd imagine he's probably slowed down some. His route running's not as good. So it's a very odd thing for them to do. And I really thought he was done. Like, I thought he was focusing on his rap career. And
right.
I didn't see this coming at all. It felt like he was gone. He was out of it. I know he had some rough personal issues.
Sure.
I think he got married and divorced within Kelsey Plum in a matter of a couple months. So who knows? I don't want to speak on his mental state because I don't know, but he's someone who has had issues in the past and with what he's went through over the last year or so. I don't know. It just feels very weird, and it doesn't feel like it has any chance of working out. I hope it does. Like, nothing against Darren Waller, nothing against the Dolphins, but it just doesn't feel like something that can work out.
Well, I think with, the focusing on the rap career, once I saw him get a face tattoo, I figured
that.
I figured you were right. I figured that's where he was headed. But I guess he'll have that face tattoo and be suiting up to play tight end for the Dolphins next year. All right, now let's move on to the Grizzlies. They started free agency by locking up their guys that are in-house. Jaren gets to renegotiate and extend for 5 years, $240 million. That is a max, $48 million per year. And then Santi, 3 years, $52.5 million. We'll wait on the Ty Jerome thing. I want to get to that separately. But locking these guys up, how do you feel about it? And the price tag, I know, is probably a big discussion among Grizzlies fans and people that follow this team on a national scale. $48 million per year for Jaren and about $17 for Santi.
Yeah, I mean, I know I've seen some people complaining about the price tag, and it's understandable because they're big numbers and bigger than you would expect. But at the same time, like, we have to be realistic that Memphis is a small market. They don't command top free agents. They don't command top players in the league. So when you have somebody like Jaren, you have to lock them up and you have to pay them whatever that number is. And I think people have already forgotten that could have been a supermax and that they avoided that. So I think that's that's a positive from it, at least. Like, you didn't have to pay whatever it was. Well, I mean, what was it going to be if you got the Supermax? Like,
$340 million over 5 years, I think.
Yeah. So,
$100 million more dollars over that same period of time.
Yeah, so you have to feel a little bit better about that. But it is what it is. It's the price of doing business in a small market. Like, you have to pay those guys maybe a little bit above market value. I mean, would Santi have got 17 on the open market? Probably not. It probably would have been a little bit less than that. But it's just the reality of the situation. Like, you can't complain about it. It's not like they didn't try to get lower deals. It's like this is what they were going to agree upon, and it is what it is. But it was exactly what you had to do. You didn't have a choice. You can't lose Jaren Jackson Jr. Like, that's not even an option, especially over the last 2 years with Ja Morant and the injuries and the suspensions and the uncertainty. Jaren Jackson has really become the centerpiece of this team. And could that flip back to Ja Morant? Like, could Ja Morant become what he was on his way to being? Like, could that still happen? Is that still open? Absolutely. But at least – basing it off of the last 2 years, like, Jaren is the guy. Like, he is the centerpiece of this team. There's no way you can afford to lose him. He's been nothing but great. He's gotten better every year of his career for the Grizzlies, been a great ambassador for the city and for, you know, the organization itself. So that's the type of guy that you pay what you have to pay him. And is he a 4- or 5-time All-Star and a 3- or 4-time All-NBA guy? No, he's not, but he's still one of the better bigs in the league, and you got to do what you got to do to keep him.
Yeah, and for Santi, $17 million per year. I just want to throw this out there because I think this is where the conversation needs to go. I think, one, Santi, if you just look at the free agent market, you know, I know he was an in-house guy, but Santi's probably better than any free agent you were ever going to bring in on the open market. I think that's very clear. Jaren as well, but that goes without saying. But also, Santi, as a player, there's not a lot of 6'11" plus 3-point shooting plus dribbling plus passing guys, you know, at that size. Like, it's kind of a rarity. And what he does is open up some sort of lineup combinations that a lot of teams don't have. He can play on the wing, he can play the four, he can play big, he can rebound at times. But he also is, you know, near a 40% shooter in playoff appearances. Like, I know people have their issues with Santi, especially on the defensive end. But when you just look at the type of player Santi is at a very young age, and he's gotten better every single year of his career, he's 23 years old, or 24 years old. Like, I think this is a projection type of contract for a guy that's kind of a rare talent when you just look around the NBA at large.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like you said, he's gotten better every year. Is he a perfect player? No. That's why he's $17 million a year and you were able to keep him. But still young, there's still room for development. And there's some players that you look at and you say that and you say they can still develop, but it becomes a question of, okay, even if they develop more, does it really help this team? And I think with Santi, when you look at him, absolutely. For all the reasons that you said, he's versatile. He can shoot. He's got something that's unteachable as far as size goes. And if he continues to develop and continues to grow on the defensive end of the floor and continues to give you different kind of lineup combinations and versatility because of his size, then you go, that was well worth $17 million. If you look back in a year or 2 years, it's probably going to be that was well worth $17 million. No sweat, no big deal. So I know, like you said, people feel a certain type of way about him. I understand it. I get it. I think a lot of people still hold him to the player that he was a year or two ago and not the player that he was this past season. And I get that. But I think with the improvements that he's made, with the upside that he has, like, it's reasonable. It's a reasonable deal for a player that can help you. And if you want to continue building this roster and get it to a championship level, then you need players like Santi and you need players like Ty Jerome, like these not huge name guys that can do different things and be versatile and just help you overall as a team.
Ty Jerome, though, you brought him up, 3 years, $28 million, $9.3 million a year. After last year, what he did for the Cavs, finishing third, sixth man of the year voting, I personally thought this contract would be a bit higher. I thought this was a pretty team-friendly, solid deal that the Grizzlies were able to get Ty Jerome on.
Yeah, I was honestly kind of shocked by the dollar amount. At a shade over $9 million a year for a player that averaged over 12 points per game, is a very effective three-point shooter, and can potentially help you in a position of need if something does happen to Ja again. If he's injured and he misses, you know, 2 or 3 weeks or whatever the case may be, I just feel like Ty Jerome gives you something that you didn't have this past season when Ja was out and missed time. Like, you have someone that I believe can keep the team overall in a rhythm. I mean, is he a perfect point guard? I mean, no, he's not a perfect player. He's a $9 million a year player.
Defensive concerns, 1 year of production, like, those things are still there. Like, there's some things that do concern you about Ty Jerome, the player.
There are valid questions. There are, you know, valid reasons why he was a $9 million per year player, not a $20 million a year player, and I understand those. But I just feel like you'll be able to breathe a little bit easier if Ja misses time and Ty Jerome's on the floor. I just feel like he's someone that can help you keep things in rhythm and allow the team to stay in that zone if Ja was to miss time. And I think this past year we saw it get really rigid at times. It just didn't feel like everything was flowing. And obviously it's not going to flow as well. Like, other players aren't going to open things up the way that Ja does or put defenses on their toes the way Ja does. And I'm not saying Ty Jerome is anything like Ja. I just think he can keep them in rhythm. And, I mean, we've seen this with point guards in the past. We saw it with Tyus Jones when he would come onto the floor, that Memphis would really be able to stay in a rhythm. And I think it's at least probable that something similar can happen with Ty Jerome.
I've come to this realization. Like, Luke Kennard was brought in at the trade deadline a couple of years ago. Ty Jerome and the vision of him, it's kind of the juiced up version of what they thought Luke Kennard would bring. Like, right. When Luke Kennard was brought in, you knew the three-point shooting was going to be apparent. He'd been doing it for years and years and years. But Ty Jerome shot 44% from three last year. I think even higher on spot up, even off the dribble, like 42% from three. And, you know, one of the things we tried to push, or at least heard in the Grizzlies' orbit regarding Luke Kennard, is, oh, well, he has a little bit of playmaking ability. And that never came to fruition.
No.
Ty Jerome has very real playmaking ability. Can get his teammates involved, good assist to turnover, can play on ball pretty comfortably, as opposed to Luke Kennard. So, like, the vision there, like, I think it's the plussed up version of what they thought Luke Kennard was going to be.
Yeah, I agree. And something that you pointed out on the podcast last night, I think is a great point. It's just the fact that he's not afraid to pull the trigger. And I feel like a lot of people got frustrated with Luke Kennard about that. Sometimes it felt like he was hesitant to take shots. And with Ty Jerome, at least with what he did last year in Cleveland, like, we didn't see that. Even playing with Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland and, you know, just some really good players on one of the best teams in the entire league, he didn't struggle to have confidence in taking shots. And I think there are definitely times when you need that, especially on this team with no more Desmond Bain, who wasn't shy to take shots and definitely was hitting those shots, to have someone like Ty Jerome, who's also not afraid and will pull the trigger more often. I think you have to feel good about that. And I'm completely with you. It's definitely a juiced up version of what they thought they were getting in Luke Kennard with much more playmaking.
No doubt. Well, Christian, I appreciate it, man. We'll talk again next week. Thanks for carving some time.
Yes, sir. See y'all next week.
Yes, sir. He is Christian Fowler at C Fowler BCM, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. Also, check out our podcast.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
On the Bluff releases every single Tuesday at noon. Now we need to hop into the Blitz coming up next. So make sure you stick around right here with the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Now, the biggest stories overloading the line. A bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM, ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
The WNBA is expanding to 18 teams by 2030. Cleveland in 2028, Detroit 2029, and Philly 2030 will each join in staggered years, paying a record $250 million expansion fee.
I guess is the better way to put it. I guess the time is now to expand if you're the WNBA. The Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark, Paige Beckers, like you have a lot of talent coming in. You're going to have Juju Watkins next year. Aja Wilson is still doing her great, still at the peak of her greatness. So you have more talent than you've ever had. You have sellable talent. You have marketable talent. So it seems like now is the time. And they have a record-setting, TV deal. I will say this, though. Adding more teams brings up a lot of questions. You're at 42 games now. How much do you expand the season? How much more strain on the body are these women going to have to undergo? We see it in the NBA, and the injuries are stacking up. And also, how interested are Cleveland, Detroit, and Philly in a WNBA franchise? What's that turnout going to look like in years 1, 2, and 3, whatever it may be? I guess the time is now. I just am concerned about what this is going to look like when it actually happens. That's my problem I have with the WNBA, expanding as quick as they are.
Yeah, I understand the want for expansion. I don't think it's a bad idea necessarily. I think that they picked very good cities to go to. I think that there are just a few more things that the WNBA needs to shore up before they make the full jump into expansion. But I think that these are still a few years away, and hopefully in that time between now and then, they're able to get their marketing and messaging under control, and everybody can get on the same page. But ultimately, I think this is a good move for the WNBA, even though it is a risk.
Yeah, and they've picked Golden State. They've picked Cleveland, Detroit, Philadelphia, all cities with NBA franchises. So there is some level of basketball sort of fever in each one of those cities. But their big ticket to your marketing point is Caitlin Clark. How do they use Caitlin Clark to market the rest of their stars? That's something I still have to see and something I've been calling for the past couple of weeks.
Did you see what happened yesterday with the player voting and still, she was ninth?
Just jealousy, man. She was what? First in fan voting, fourth in the media, and she's, according to players, the ninth best guard in the league. Come on. I know she hasn't played well this year.
Listen,
she's in a shooting slump and she's been hurt.
Right,
I get that, but you see it in the NBA, regardless of if Steph Curry is hurt on a consistent basis throughout a regular season leading up to the All-Star break, he's still very high in player thoughts and media thoughts and fan thoughts. It continues to show there's still a overwhelming jealousy around Caitlin Clark and the attention she brings.
Yeah,
to WNBA.
And I don't think either of us are calling for her to have been number one.
Because
I think that would be quite ridiculous. But at least top five. I think that she should at least be in the top five of guards.
This isn't ninth overall. This is ninth of guards. That's crazy.
That's crazy. That is absolutely wild.
That's absolutely insane. After all of the record-setting sort of numbers she put up last year, I think she's earned better than ninth best guard in the WNBA, according to players. It's just, it's more of the same. And that, to be honest with you, Connor, that's another thing when it comes to messaging and, with this expansion and what I need to see, they need to get over that. They really do.
Yeah.
Because I just think there's an unserious nature that the normal consumer looks at that with. When you're just seemingly jealous of this bright, shining star that's bringing you viewership numbers, ticket sales, everything else.
Yeah, absolutely. But ultimately, the WNBA going into cities like Cleveland, Detroit, and Philadelphia, cities that you know love basketball, people are going to show up if there is good basketball there, I think is a good idea. You know, were you a little bit disappointed with the news that Nashville wasn't one of the expansion teams when that has been in the mix?
I don't care.
Don't care?
Don't care.
If it was Memphis, we
would
care.
If it was Memphis, I'd care. Yeah, sure. WNBA team in Memphis, okay.
I think that's fair.
But Nashville, whatever. They get all the good things in the state of Tennessee. I don't really care. If they lose out on one thing, with the stadium funding we've seen go to the Titans and the lack of stadium funding that they throw Memphis's way, like I'm not losing sleep over it.
Well, Gabe, they do have Vanderbilt. So what more do they need? They have Vanderbilt.
Just ask
football.
Diego Pavia, yeah. Brother. Yes, for sure.
SGA has agreed to a 4-year, $285 million Supermax extension with the Thunder through 2030-31. It is the richest annual salary for a player in league history.
What a good thing for SGA to do for the Thunder, who just won a championship. I know that people are going after LeBron for not taking pay cuts and all that, but this truly is a show of good faith to the Thunder. He wants to have good players around him. He saw how much it helped him this year. And to sign it right now, he has two more years on his current contract, $38 million and $40 million. He's clearly outperforming those as an MVP and a Finals MVP and a Finals winner already. And then, you know, it doesn't kick in until 27-28. And if he would have signed it when he became an unrestricted free agent or after next season, the escalators would have been even higher because the cap's going up every year. So, like, it would have been right around $76 million per year instead of $71 million per year. And I know that that's like seems like a drop in the bucket, and it's like, oh, you know, don't give him too much credit for taking a pay cut. And I get that part of it, but he is getting ahead of this for the Thunder, so he's going to take less on his next contract than he would have taken when he signed the extension, if he had signed the extension after next season. It would have tied their hands a little bit more. So I think this is a good show of faith by SGA. He's worth all the money for the Oklahoma City Thunder. He's shown that. And I think he set them up for more sustained success than he would have if he would have signed after next year.
Absolutely. And the thing about SGA is he's probably going to just get better for a few seasons. Like, he's just now entering his prime of his NBA career. And he had quite literally one of the best seasons we have ever seen. Just no doubt about it. He had a 68-win team, MVP, Finals MVP, NBA championship. You can't get better than that. He's the leader of that team. He's the leader of that locker room. He's the biggest star in that city. You absolutely have to pay him. And it is kind of funny saying that, you know, financially, this is actually probably a good thing for the Thunder
because
while they're also going to be paying him the highest annual salary.
It's the richest annual salary in NBA history. But if you read the tea leaves and you see how this is going to work, the next 2 years, they're going to have still freedom. $38 million and $40 million before this actually kicks in. And then it will still be below what he would have ultimately gotten had he waited. So just I think this is good business all around to show a good faith. As much as $71 million per year, it's like you're taken care of. He is in turn taking less money than he could have gotten. And I think there's something to be praised about.
I do want to ask you this. With all of the moves that we discussed in the first segment of today's show, we talked about, you know, a lot of teams in the Western Conference have absolutely gotten better during this NBA offseason. Do you still think that the Thunder are the clear favorites in the Western Conference?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Rockets and Nuggets are right there, though.
I think so, too. I think that the Nuggets
have Nuggets took them into seven games with the roster they had last year. Mm-hmm. And the roster they're bringing into next year is substantially better around the edges. So I think the Nuggets and Rockets are right there. They present different challenges to this Thunder team. But, like, I think you just have to give them their due. They can run back a NBA Finals winning team next year, and they don't have to ask any questions about it. They can just go straight into next year with everybody under contract, everybody rostered. When you do that, I have to give you your credit.
Do you have any curiosity about whether or not they will decide to make a move to try to improve the roster now, though, seeing the rest of the Western Conference load up a little bit?
That's a good question. What's out there for them exactly?
I think that's the real question.
Yeah, that's what I would ask.
What they
now
get? And that's why if they do make a move to improve, I think it would be in season. I would be surprised if they tried to do anything in the offseason, just because this offseason seems like more celebratory for them. They're paying guys. Like, we know that Jalen Williams just got paid. SGA just got paid. They're trying to make sure that they can have this roster on the floor. But I do wonder if they start the season not at the pace that they did last year, and they're seeing the Western Conference and the Rockets and the Timberwolves and the Nuggets are world beaters, and then you have other teams around the West doing well. I wonder if they will look to try to improve the roster in any way.
I get that. There's one thing that the Thunder have that even the Rockets and Nuggets don't have, though, and that's continuity.
Sure.
Right?
Absolutely. Like good point.
They already know what they have. They're going to go into next year. As much as I like the additions that the Rockets have made, they're and the Nuggets have made, there's still a meshing of personalities and play style that has to happen before you know, and I believe I can project that they're going to be that good, but before you really crown them, you have to see how all that meshes.
Fair. Yeah! Talked yesterday about the 2028 release of EA Sports College Basketball. But there's some beef going on behind the scenes. 2K has made it clear that they're not going quietly into the night.
Yeah. 2K was on Twitter yesterday and like responded, quote tweeted EA Sports sort of teaser and said the campus has been quiet too long. So 2K, if you remember, I think the last one they made was 2K8. Anthony Sain brought it up to us.
It was Greg Oden.
It was Greg Oden on the cover.
That game
rocked. Yeah, that game was very good. So they've been in the college basketball space before. 2K put a statement out saying 2K is the undisputed home of basketball gaming. We have a strong history with college hoops and are exploring exciting new ways to bring athletes and schools to life, classes in session. So 2K is really trying to compete and go after EA Sports and their college basketball game. And you know what I'll say?
Good.
Being a guy who still plays video games, especially like the college games, college football 25 still in my rotation. I think competition breeds greatness.
Absolutely.
So I'm all for 2K and EA Sports competing in the college basketball space when it comes to video games.
I got no notes. That's exactly what I was going to say. Competition is good for the consumer ultimately when it comes to video games. I want these two competing against each other to try to get our dollar.
May the best man win.
May the best man win.
Also, EA Sports, their rollout, obviously they have to go through a bunch of hoops with any college sports game now and get the licensing and all of that. But did you see the Athletic story about the game and how many teams they're going to have?
No.
Let me just give you an over under of, I don't know, 360. Over under.
I'm going to go over based on what you're saying.
730.
Oh, my God. Are they going to have D3 teams?
I have no idea.
Is Rhodes College going to be in it?
Is
my friend Zoe Goodson going to be one of the coaches on the sideline?
I don't think they have that in the plan. That would be kind of cool.
That would be awesome.
I'd love to see Zoe in a video game.
Dude, I would take Rhodes all the way to the title, baby.
I'm assuming
Zoe Coach of the Year.
And this is a good idea, I think, for the college football game as well. I think they may do like throwback teams.
Oh.
Like great teams from the. That's my assumption.
If they give us the 2008 Memphis roster,
yes.
I will cry.
Yes, that was my first thought. I hope they do that. That would literally bring a tear
to Fab Four?
That would bring a tear.
That Houston team? Oh my God. So many possibilities.
Michigan Fab Five would be fun too.
Yeah, Fab Five. I said Fab Four, didn't I?
Yeah.
Fab Five.
Yeah, Fab Four. But I'm assuming that's what it is. Because I don't think you
That'd
don't
be
dip
hope.
Into D2 and D3 for the college basketball game. That wouldn't make sense. They don't play each other.
I don't know.
I mean, you have like the lower division D1 teams playing D2 teams, and maybe D2 teams playing D3 teams, but you don't have crossover there. I'm assuming these are going to be throwback great teams from the past.
That'd be awesome.
Of the greatest programs in college basketball. And I would think if they're doing that, 08 Memphis has, like, I don't think there's any ifs, ands, or buts about it. It has to be on the game.
Do you think it would be difficult because they technically had to get rid of that season in the NCAA? I wonder if that's...
Oh, God. Dang it. Why are you poking holes in it, Connor?
But I feel like that would take a lot
I think
of
that's a good
teams
point.
Off the board.
That's a good
though.
Point.
But maybe.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
And maybe I'm taking a shot at Tennessee fans.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it, stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
The C throwback team would be in there.
2008.
You think so?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, that Chris Lofton team.
Okay.
Yeah, which other one? Yeah. I think so.
No Final Four, so it's like you have no like clear leader.
Right.
Right? that's
Probably that one.
Maybe.
I think that the one versus two,
Memphis versus Tennessee, I guess, but like, is that without question the best team in Tennessee history?
Probably.
I mean, why I'm asking the question.
It's not like we have a definitive answer by any means. Did you see John's tweet? It was very funny.
What did he say?
He was like, now Tennessee fans will be able to live a Final Four. Good tweet. Good tweet, John.
But either way, I like the competition because I think it's going to breed greatness in the video game space, and we'll see how it all plays out. But that will do it for the Blitz. One more segment left in the day. We're going to rewind when we return right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer,
SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Bryan Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fischer and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays, and now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.